Hello, everyone. I'm Zisi, a student of Chassidus, aspiring to live a God-centered life, while also mothering, staying present, and holding on to creativity and drive. Each month, I'm exploring where these ideals meet through the lens of Chassidic thought. Let's probe the heights and return grounded as we navigate standing between earth and sky. We took a little break last month with the very hectic Yom Tov season. And in the last few weeks, as we exited Sukkot through Simchas Torah, we started the Torah again, and we resumed from the beginning of Sefer Bereishis. And this Sefer Bereishis is interesting because the rest of the Torah really tells us the story of our people becoming a nation, and also just very practically the laws of how we live a Jewish life. But Sefer Bereishis is not really saying the story of our people. It's saying the story of our ancestry before we became a people. And we can ask a question of why. Why do we need to hear all these stories of Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov and their families? What are we learning from these stories? And our sages teach us that Maisa Avos Siman Labanim, that the actions of the fathers are a sign for the children. Part of the reason that we learn through Sefer Bereishis and we learn the stories and we learn about our forefathers and foremothers is because they have provided us with our spiritual DNA. They are our origin story. There's a lot of talk today about generational trauma and how we can inherit trauma from our grandparents and great-grandparents, even if it's not something that we've ever experienced personally, but how that passes down through our DNA so that we're sort of born in this maybe slightly compromised state. And the same way we're born potentially in this compromised state, we also inherit the resilience of the people who come before us and the strength that it took for them to survive everything that happened to them. I think this is the story of the Jewish people. All the pain, all the suffering, all the exile, and also all the strength and resilience and commitment. And specifically, reading the stories of Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, we learn about our mothers and fathers. They provide us with a spiritual DNA. If you learn the Hasidic and Kabbalistic teachings about these parshiyos, you'll see that a lot of it deals with the origins of their souls. And where is the source of these souls within the context of creation? By learning about our fathers and mothers. Our fathers and mothers are responsible for this spiritual DNA that is passed down through the generations into every single Jewish soul, how every single Jewish soul is connected to and derives energy from the same spiritual sources that our mothers and fathers did as well. So what I wanted to focus on, and maybe we'll do a little series over the next couple of weeks, is specifically on the mothers. As a woman and as a mother myself, I feel that there's a lot that we can learn specifically from our mothers. And sometimes the study of the mothers can get neglected. So I wanted to devote some time to studying Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. And today we're going to focus on Sarah. In this week's Parsha, Parshas Lech Lecha, we're introduced to Avram and Sarah, and they are commanded to leave their home and travel to a new land. And we follow their story of establishing themselves in this new land, providing influence and spreading the word of Hashem to all the people who were never exposed to monotheism before. And Avram and Sarah are childless, and we hear how they are blessed to have a son at the old age. Sarah has a son at the old age of 90. And then we follow her story as she's raising her son. And something that we see about Sarah is that she is an extremely strong character. She is not a meek woman on the side. She is fully involved in the decision-making process. At one point, when Avram and Sarah are disagreeing about whether Avram should send away Sarah's maidservant Hagar and her son, and Avram's son Yishmael. Hashem tells Avram, Kol asher tamar elecha Sarah, everything that Sarah, your wife, tells you, listen to her voice. Sarah's voice is equally, and if not more, heard in this story. Let's try to understand Sarah a little bit more. There's a very fascinating Gemara in Bava Basra. It's actually a little, dare I say, strange. It's a story. I'll read it in English from the Gemara. It says, Rabbi Benai was marking burial caves. He was marking the caves for the purpose of helping to prevent people from perhaps contracting ritual impurity by coming in contact with the caves. When he arrived at the cave of Avram, aka Ma'ar Samachpela, he encountered Eliezer, the servant of Avram, who was standing before the entrance. Rav Benai said to him, what is Avram doing at this moment? Eliezer said to him, he is lying in the arms of Sarah, and she is examining his head. Rabbi Benai said to him, go tell him that Benai is standing at the entrance. Eliezer said to him, let him enter, since it is known that there is no evil inclination in this higher world. He entered, examined the cave in order to measure it, and exited it. This is a story happening over a thousand years after Eliezer's death. So when we say that he encountered Eliezer, it seems he must have been some sort of coming down as a visitor from the next world there to protect Avram and Sarah, faithful even after death to his master. And apparently it could be read or could be understood that Avram lying in Sarah's lap and her examining his head could potentially be an inappropriate way to greet a visitor. But Eliezer responds to him that in the next world, there's no evil inclination, as in there's nothing inappropriate happening here. The fact that they are in this position over here, it's appropriate for you to see and you can go in. There's no evil inclination in the next world. This is all pure. And so Rav Benai enters and examines, and he leaves. It seems really strange that Sarah is examining Avram's head. But if we go a little bit deeper into the Kabbalistic sources of Avram and Sarah's souls, this story becomes a little bit clearer. We know about Avram that he was the embodiment of chesed. Avram was pure, unadulterated kindness. He gave to everyone. He gave to everyone indiscriminately. He prays even for the people of Sodom, even for the people who are in the lowest rungs of evil, even for the people who God can find no compassion for and needs to ultimately destroy. Avraham still prays for those people because he is chesed. He is pure kindness. He wants to save the world. That is what Avraham wants to do. And we see that Avraham has two sons. He has Yitzchak from his wife Sarah, and he takes a second wife, Hagar, and has Yishmael from Hagar. And we learn something about indiscriminate kindness from these stories. What we learn is that kindness that is not channeled and kindness that does not take the recipient into consideration can be manipulated for evil, can be manipulated for unholiness. When God created the world, he created good, and his energy is good. His life force is good. So how can evil exist? Evil exists because God turns away from the evil. He creates a void where his energy is not expressed and found in an open way. And over there, ego and evil can start to breed. But where does this evil receive its energy from if godly energy is good? Evil receives its energy by leeching on to positive bounty. When it comes to kindness that has no boundaries, that has no gates, that has no guardians. That is a place where klipa, where forces of impurity can leech onto and extract energy for themselves. And we see this happen where God tells Abraham, no, we're not going to save Sodom. Sodom is not a place worthy of kindness. Kindness is not applicable in every situation. Sometimes we need to put up guards. Sometimes we need to put up restraints. And we see too with the story of Yishmael. And this is a story where Hashem tells Avram to listen to his wife, Sarah. Because Avram has compassion. Avram is kindness and he wants his son to stay. He wants his son to be safe. And Sarah has to tell him, no, Yishmael is not having a positive influence on our son, Yitzchak, and we need to send him away. And this can seem extremely harsh. This can sound very difficult to think about a father needing to send his son away. It doesn't really speak to our modern sensibilities. But Hashem tells him, listen to Sarah, your wife. Sarah, your wife, is onto something here. And this is because Sarah is rooted in the opposite energy of kindness. And she is rooted in the power of Gevurah, which is the power of strength, contraction, exclusivity. Investing energy only into specific vessels and only investing the amount that fits into that vessel. Only giving energy to something that is worthy of receiving it or capable of receiving it, not giving indiscriminately. And by doing so, by being extremely specific about where the energy is going to be invested, by being extremely discerning about what she invests in, Sarah is able to direct the energy so that it is not able to be siphoned by evil and by negativity. It remains focused on where it's supposed to go. And then the klipa is not able to extract and steal that energy. And this interesting scenario of Avram lying in Sarah's lap and she's examining his head is indicative of this dynamic. The hair is a very interesting part of the body. Hair is both alive and not alive at the same time. It's alive, but it has a really, really, really minuscule life force. The proof of this is that, yes, when you pull hair from the root, it hurts because it's connected to life. And therefore, there are nerves there that will send signals to the brain that, hey, this hurts. The hair is being pulled off of my head. However, getting a haircut does not hurt. Cutting the ends of the hair does not hurt because the life force is only right there at the root, a very, very, very small bit of life that is only at the root. And then as it extends, the life force becomes less and less, and it's basically dead. So you can cut it without it hurting. It's similar to a nail. If you've ever had a nail fully fall off, you know how painful that is. But we trim our nails all the time without pain because the hair on the nails are both similar in that they are these very, very, very weak sources of life. Any other part of the body, if you cut it, it hurts. But in these two parts of the body, it doesn't hurt because of this weakened life force. And it is specifically to these weaker spaces that the power of Klipa knows that it can leech energy from because it can be unnoticed. The same way that's where lice will begin. In our hair, if I would have a louse on my face or on my arm, then I would notice it right away because these are spaces that are full of life. But the lice go into the hair and you don't really realize that they're there because, again, this is a weakened life force, and then they're able to take from there. So similarly, hair kabbalistically represents this slighter life force where the klipa can latch onto unnoticed and siphon just enough energy for themselves to perpetuate and to continue existing. Avram, being this indiscriminate giver, is the perfect person for klipa to try to get energy from. because he gives without boundaries and he gives without taking into account who is receiving. So the Klipa tries to latch onto Avram's hair. And what is Sarah's role? Sarah's role is being the protector. She is checking his hair. She is combing through the hair, making sure that there is nothing there that is trying to take his energy. Sarah is the guardian of the energy. Sarah is the one who makes sure that energy doesn't end up where it's not supposed to be. Sarah knows that being soft without strength perpetuates evil, that giving without boundaries turns destructive. The Lubavitcher Rebbe has a really interesting talk on Parshas Chayei Sarah. And he asks a fascinating question. He says, Chayei Sarah literally means the life of Sarah. However, the whole Parsha actually seems to be discussing the death of Sarah and everyone in her life moving on from her death. The portion opens up with Avram purchasing the burial plot for his wife, which is Ma'aris HaMachpelah in Hebron. And then it talks about the marriage of Yitzchak and Rivka, and it says that through Yitzchak's marriage, he found consolation for the loss of his mother. It speaks about how the holiness that was always present in his mother's tent, the shechina, the bread not going stale, and the candles remaining lit all week, which disappeared after her death, returned with Rivka entering into the tent. And Yitzchak is finding consolation and seems to be comforted from his mother and moving away from the presence of his mother in his life. And then the final portion of Chayei Sarah describes how Avram took another wife, who Rashi explained to us is actually Hagar. Hagar has a new name, Keturah, and he takes her back after Sarah sent her away. And then it discusses Yishmael's progeny, all the generations that come from Yishmael. This seems to be in opposition to Sarah, who declared to send away Hagar and her child. So how can it be that this portion is called Chayei Sarah, the life of Sarah, if all these things that seem to really negate Sarah's existence and her will are taking place? The Gemara tells us, what is life? It says that Yaakov Avinu did not die. Why? Mazara b'chayim, avhu b'chayim. If his progeny lives on, so too he lives on. The truly timeless aspect, element of human existence is when their soul power and their soul mission is perpetuated and lives on in their children. Sarah's power is the power of gevura, of focus, strength, and exclusivity. While Avram fathered not only Yitzchak, but also Yishmael, thereby becoming a father not only of the Jewish people, but also of other nations, Sarah is only the mother of Yitzchak exclusively. She is connected specifically and only with the Jewish nation. She senses the unique quality of the Jewish people. And this is the theme that we find running through Parshas Chayei Sarah. First, we said, Avram buries her, and in doing so, he purchases Ma'aris HaMachpelah. Before he purchased Ma'aris HaMachpelah, who was buried there? It was Adam and Chava. Adam and Chava are parents of all of mankind. It can be a universal location for everyone because the parents of mankind are buried there. But Avraham purchases Ma'aris HaMachpelah. He makes sure to spend money on it. He doesn't want it for free. He wants to say, I legally own this place, and now it is exclusively used for the Jews. And here we see the influence of Sarah on Avram, where Avram, the ultimate giver who gives to everyone, recognizes the necessity for having a space that is for the Jewish people. And it is very interesting that that space is actually contested until this day. The city of Hebron is contested and Ma'aris HaMachpelah. But Avram knew that this space would be contested. And through purchasing it, he's perpetuating Sarah's deep knowledge and influence that there are some spaces that are holy for the Jewish people specifically. The second area in this parsha where we see Sarah's influence is with Yitzchak's marriage to Rivka. When Avram sends and approaches his servant Eliezer to go find a wife for his son Yitzchak, Eliezer initially suggests his own daughter. But Avram says no, he wants a wife from his own family. And he sends him specifically to Canaan to choose a wife from his own family. Bethuel was his nephew, and they choose his daughter Rivka. And again, here we see that influence of Sarah saying, our family is not the same as the other families. Even though they were much further away, there may have been quality women closer nearby. But Sarah highlights to Avram the fact that our family is different. Chesed says, no, we're all the same. One of us is not different from the other. We don't have different qualities from each other. No one is better than anyone else. Gevura says, we are all different. And different people fit together in different ways. And we need to acknowledge the difference in order to find the right match. And on some level, if everyone fits together, then no one really fits together. It's only in highlighting the exclusivity and the fact that no, Yitzchak cannot just marry anyone. There is a certain quality that is found in our family that he needs to match with him. That allows for marriage to even have its place. What is the specialness and holiness of a relationship between two people if those two people could just be anyone? If any man could marry any woman? It is specifically the element of exclusivity that creates this relationship. And lastly, in the story of Avram remarrying, and also in the discussion about his offsprings from Yishmael, what is emphasized in this story is the fact that Avram gives everything that he owns to Yitzchak and to the other children. He gives them gifts and sends them away to the east. Similarly, Yishmael's offsprings are alluded to as being descended from Hagar, who is the maid servant of Sarah, emphasizing on some level the hierarchy over here, that Sarah is the main wife and that Hagar is the maidservant. And this discussion can make us feel very uncomfortable in a world that values inclusivity, in a world that values sameness, in a world that values softness over strength, kindness over boundaries, gentleness. Sarah pushes us to get in touch with the mama bear that is inside each of us. The mother is always portrayed as soft and gentle and giving and kind. And these are all true elements of motherhood. But the mother is also the fierce protector of her child. The mother is someone who can have empathy for other people's children, but she's still going to love and protect her own children more. And both can exist. I think this is a tension that a lot of us struggle with. How do we reconcile feeling kindness towards everyone, but also preserving energy for our own, and also recognizing the necessity for strength and boundaries and protecting our own, and even within our relationships with our own, how there is a space for giving and kindness and gentleness, and there's also a space for strength, for making sure that we are giving in a way that it can be received, that we're giving in a way that the energy won't be siphoned off to be used for negative things, that the energy will only be able to be applied in a positive way because we're giving with intention and taking the recipient into account. The recognition that exclusivity does not imply superiority or abuse of others, but implies that every person has a unique purpose in this world, and not everyone can do anything. If everyone can do anything, then what is special about anyone doing anything? By recognizing that we all have unique soul powers, by recognizing that we all have a unique space in this world, recognizing how even within Judaism, there are different categories. We have the Kohen, the Levi, and Yisrael, and each play their own unique individual role. We have men and women who play unique and individual roles within Jewish life. Children and adults are not treated the same, don't have the same level of obligation, don't have the same level of responsibility. It's specifically in our exclusive roles that we're able to get in touch with our deepest powers. Sarah reminds us that we are allowed to protect what is ours without shame and without fear. We are allowed to protect our peace. We are allowed to protect our purity. We are allowed to cut ourselves off from that which pulls us away from God. We are allowed to invest our energy more into that which enhances our connection with God. And obviously, boundless kindness has its place. Boundless empathy has its place. We're just not talking about Avram over here, so we're not emphasizing it. But restraint and boundaries and strength and judgment, which we so often look at as a bad word, also have their place. Making sure that every energy is directed exactly where it needs to be.